Now, Susan, you okay? So you've given up all your addictions.
Yeah, that was lighting up for my book. Lighting up, I quit cigarettes, alcohol, dope, gum, bread. I quit everything.
Bread.
I'm going to make you go see my addiction specialist.
But you know, if I go, well, first of all, I'm like, I don't chew gum.
Cigarettes.
Okay. So I'm okay. I don't chew gum. Why can't one have crutch?
There's a difference between a habit and an addiction, and I bet if you took a test, it would be an addiction. Because if it's just a habit and you could quit easily, or it's not getting in the way of anything, then that's different than like an addiction. And I personally found that addictions blocked me. They got in the way of other things. And when I quit, by the way, I quit 6 years ago, and that's why I sold 5 books and a movie and since then. And I think it's because I had to find other things to replace the addictions with.
Interesting.
How to get addicted to healthier things.
Because you're kind of, but are you hyper?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you're kind of hyper anyway.
Right.
Do you think that, see, I always thought, you know, if I quit smoking, then I would be so hyper and full of energy that the studio here on 49th Street would not be able to contain me. It would be Candace Bush now busting loose and busting out of every wall and window.
I thought nicotine's a stimulant. It makes you more hyper. Keeps you from sleeping. So you might be more calm.
I don't want to be more calm. I mean, I had such a hard time getting out of bed today, Susan. Because I had root canal yesterday. We talked about this.
No fun.
No, it's no fun. Only as good as your word. Who's your favorite mentor? How many mentors have you had?
I've had a lot of different mentors. I think everybody should try to spread it around because then you don't, if you drive one person crazy or they hate you, then you can find somebody else. I've had a lot, and these are my favorite ones, and I wrote about 7 of them, and the first was my high school teacher who turned me on to writing.
Okay, but I don't even think my high school teachers, you know, particularly liked me or remembered me with fondness.
I bet you had one
teacher. Not one goddamn one of them encouraged me.
Come on, I bet you had one teacher in your life who got you or liked you or encouraged you or thought you were smart.
You know what? They all liked me, but, you know, not one of them said, oh, you can be a writer.
What about an editor? Because I wrote about 2 different great editors. I bet you had editors who bought your work or who championed
you. Well, you know, I had people in New York when I came to New York, but I had to come to New York. There was nobody in my small town that was behind Candace Bushnell. And I want to, now I'm pissed off about it, and I want to say, fuck it. Fuck everybody.
Well, by the way, the book is about making it in New York. You know, that's the whole subtitle is like obsessive quest for success as a writer in New York. So after Michigan, I immediately moved to New York, and all the rest of the mentors are here. And they were editors and a great boss I had at The New Yorker and a cousin of mine who helped me out. So, and yeah, I think you can have different mentors for different things also. So I had different mentors that helped me in different areas.
Do you think, like, when are you too old to have a mentor?
Never.
I never had a mentor.
I bet you did. I bet editors who championed your work, even if it was just for a short period of time.
Exactly. But I never, you know, had anybody that I looked up and, you know, that I said, oh, I want to be like them.
Well, but did you have an editor who ever helped your writing? Like you know, if you, like at The Observer when you were doing your column?
I absolutely did. I had people who believed in me, you know, the editor-in-chief who gave me my, you know, gave me my own column.
Right, and that's a major mentor.
You know, yeah, so.
And I bet with TV, you know, there had to be people that championed your, you know, Sex and the City. Didn't you have people that?
That just, you know, happened. I was just walking down the street one day and pretty much. That was all kind of, you know, it was sold so far in advance. Just because, I don't know. I mean, kind of because I was friends with Darren Star, really.
But so he could be a mentor if he, you know, early on, if he championed your work or helped you or. I mean, it's a loose definition. I just think of it as somebody that was, you know, older than me or wiser, had more experience, that was able to share their experience. And the book those relationships are very complicated. And then at the end, I wrote about how to have a protege, and I try to have my own, and I basically screw it up every minute. It became like an all about Eve mess. So I think it's hard to have a protege.
Now, what happened? So this was, you wanted a protege. Was it an assistant or what was it, Susan?
It was somebody young who called me, a student who wanted to do an interview with me. And then it turned out she wound up, joining my writing group and wanting my help in a lot of different areas. And at first it was like a love fest, and then it got very complicated. It's, you know, it's a complicated relationship. Because really, if you go to a boss or someone, it's kind of like saying, I want to be you, I want your life, I want your job. So it's a little complicated.
Well, you know, I always forget about that. It's the old, I want to do an interview with you trick. That's the new All About Eve technique. Yes. You call somebody up and you say, oh, I love you so much, I want to do an interview with you. And then you meet them and you tell them how much you love them. And then you...
It's actually smart, though, because...
Sniggle in and...
The dumbest mistake I think young people make is that they contact people that they want help from and they start their email or their letter all about them. So they'll be, I'm Phi Beta Kappa, or I'm so great, or I just wrote a novel, and I think that's stupid. And I actually think the smart ones know to Google the person or to start with, I loved your book, I love your work, I admire you so much. And it is... That is sort of seductive to have a young person say that. Don't you find that when young people love your work?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's nice. I do. But you know what? I always feel like, unfortunately, I just don't have time really to write back. I mean, there was a lovely girl who once was doing a story for the Edith Wharton Society. So I met with her and that kind of thing. But
you're very generous on your radio show, because I listen, and you have a lot of writers and people on, and you're very generous with their projects and plugging them. So in a way, that's extremely helpful. That's kind of like being a mentor.
Yeah, that absolutely is. So how did it get complicated with this girl? She came in. She said she wanted to interview you, Susan. Did you see yourself in her?
Yes, of course.
You saw a younger version of yourself.
Exactly. Well, boy, what a cliche.
And did you think she was really pretty?
Yes. And she spoke as fast as I did. Yeah. And I invited her to come sit in on my classes. And she's great. And actually, the complications came in when... at a certain point in a mentor-protege relationship, the mentor has all the power, but then at a certain point when you sort of become friends, everything turns around. And so the expectation was sort of, I think that changed. And I think that's happened to me, where I've had mentors who then, when I got older, more successful. Yeah.
They turn nasty.
It gets complicated, I think. You know, and there's like a expectation.
There's jealousy
that you, yes, exactly.
All of that. Well, you know, the truth is, did you feel like your protege could... surpass you
in some ways? That's actually the last chapter. I sort of write about that a little bit.
And how did you feel about that? Because it's kind of like having a kid.
I write about that. It's like having a fake kid.
It's having a fake kid. You know, here's the issue.
Exactly.
You know what? Fake kids are not. It's not a good idea. It's like
on the other hand, you could say goodbye.
It's like buying real estate with someone you're not married to.
On the other hand, it's easier to say goodbye. Like if it's your kid, you're sort of stuck with them.
Yeah. But you like your own kids, though.
Sometimes. I mean, you hear stories where...
People don't.
Yeah, or where you're stuck with helping someone until they're 87, you know? Whereas if you at a certain point, a protege relationship, you can end it on nice terms.
Right. How did you end it? Well, did you do something nasty? Because sometimes people... You know, your protege or whatever can try to take your work.
It wasn't nasty. It was just it got a little bit complicated and uncomfortable. But I still wish her well. And I actually made a decision to sort of leave the relationship on a nice level. And I recommended her for a teaching job that she wanted. And if I saw her, I think it would be nice and friendly.
But how did it get complicated, though?
Got complicated.
Did she try to sleep with your husband? Or
No, nothing like that. She wrote another article about me, and I asked her to...
not put something in.
Kind of to look, could I look at it before it came out, and then I wasn't happy with something that got printed, and that's how it started. That got complicated, and that made me uncomfortable. On the other hand, it's interesting because one of the mentors I wrote about didn't like something that I wrote in this book, and that's complicated too, because you don't want to give anybody control of anything you're writing. So,
yeah, I think these relationships are tricky.
They are, but
overall... It makes me not want to get involved into any of them.
Overall, but I will say that... Like,
I don't know. I said that weird. It makes me not want to get involved into any of them. I'm so grammatically incorrect there. It makes me not want to get involved into such... in such sorts of relationships.
But I will say that the book is really, it's a tribute to seven mentors who really helped me out and saved my career and saved my life. So I do think the relationships can be amazing. And by the way, I'm a teacher, and so I'm still constantly meeting new young students. I'm starting classes next week again, and I have protégés, so I keep doing it. But it's good to, part of the reason I wrote the book is I want people to understand how intense and complicated the relationships can be. In fact, the biggest fight I had was my editor wanted me to take out the last chapter about how to have a protégé because she thought I would offend young people because I told the truth about what it's like to have a protégé. And at one point, I even said, like, somebody called me and I was like, oh, God, am I going to have to read their, like, 800-page stupid, you know, memoir about their screwed-up family or their autobiographical novel, like this expectation that I have nothing better to do than to sit around and, you know, be a free 24-hour editing service. And I was really honest about it. And the editor said, take it out because you're going to offend young people. And I said, no, I want young people to know that when you approach an older writer to ask for their agent or to ask them to read something, that's their attitude. They don't want to, and it's a headache, and it's a pain in the ass, and you have to know that, and you have to approach them really smart, and you can't be entitled. You can't have this, because if you have this ludicrous expectation that people that are older and more successful are going to just, you know, have nothing better to do than to help you, then you're going to get very disappointed, and you're going to screw it up. So I actually wanted to keep that relationship. I wanted to keep that true story. And what was great was the book's coming out in 2 weeks, and there's a 19-year-old college blogger who read the book, and he quoted from that chapter, and he said that was his favorite chapter because it was not politically correct, and it was no bullshit, and it taught him what mentors are really thinking. And I was so excited because I didn't want to, you don't want to talk down to your audience. I wanted to, like, you know, tell the truth and be smart. So I was really excited that you know, somebody got that.
So the truth is basically that, you know, being a mentor to somebody is kind of a pain.
Well, it's a little bit like the dating scenario where you sort of have to woo somebody. You know, it's not like you can't have an expectation. Oh, this, I'm so great, this person's going to fall madly in love with me.
All right, but, you know, do you think that somebody who's looking for a mentor, do you think there's something a little unstable in that? Inherently.
No,
I do a little bit.
No, because every student is looking up to a teacher.
Right.
You know, everybody in therapy.
Right.
And everybody in therapy. Everybody in therapy is looking to somebody smarter to give them help. Anybody that has a boss, like if you're 20 years old or 23 and you're starting a job and there's a, you know, you have interns looking up at you. So I think it's a really common relationship. I think almost anybody in school or work has higher ups. And so I do think there's beautiful connections where you get someone that hires you or promotes you or teaches you. But what I hope the book does is I hope it sort of helps young people understand that it's a complicated relationship and that you can't be entitled, and that if there's somebody that you need help from, you have to do a lot more of the work. And
you've got to be respectful.
You have to be completely respectful, and you have to travel more.
This is the thing that's tricky is, you know, people want your opinion about their work. And I mean, this is why I don't do it, because I feel like there's something kind of sacred about it, and I don't want to lie.
But see, there's a way to not lie and to help them and to be honest, I think. Like, just for an example, my friend who literally said to me, she read this novel.
Fiction.
I said, why hasn't this been published? And she said, because you have no imagination whatsoever, stop writing fiction, write nonfiction. And the book was about two sister-in-law. She said, nothing more boring, write about sex. And then she said, you're ambivalent about this person. You write best about people you love. And I went home crying, and the next day put the manuscript away, and the next day started Five Men Who Broke My Heart, which was nonfiction about sex and people I love. And that was my breakthrough. So by listening to her, it was harsh, but by listening to what she said,
you achieved.
It totally unlocked me.
But most people, though, I mean, don't you think that most people today, they don't want to hear any criticism?
Actually,
and they think that they're entitled not to.
Actually, my successful students, and I have quite a few students who've gotten published and who got book deals, and almost, if I had to divide up who's successful and who's not, the ones who listen to the criticism and can take it and then rewrite based on the criticism are always the ones that are, like, getting clips in the New York Times and getting book deals. And the ones that are like, you cannot touch a comma of mine, those are the ones that aren't successful. So it's actually incredibly important to learn.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, being able to take criticism, I think, is really, really important, which is why you have to look for people smarter than you. I mean, there's a line in the book that if you hang out with sycophants, you're going to turn into Michael Jackson. I mean, you can't just hang out with people who tell you you're brilliant, everything you do is smart. You have to hang out with people who tell you the truth, even if it's harsh, and you have to kind of listen, you know, because otherwise you could be really self-deluded.
Well, you know what? I just want everybody to tell me how fabulous I am now. I do. I mean, otherwise, you know what? I could go on Amazon.
You know what? Don't you have an editor when you hand in your books? Don't you want real comments from an editor? You know, maybe it's something minor like the structure or, you know, I mean,
yeah.
Right. But I find that.
Yes, I do. But, you know, that's a work relationship, though.
Right. But most mentorships start with either school or work. And I'm teaching writing. So I have 100 students a term that all they want to do is get published, get books published, get newspaper and magazine stuff. So they're asking my advice. So I'm being really honest with them.
So it's still there that people really want to publish books.
So desperately. I have so many students that are especially Media Bistro, which is adults also. So it's not only
they all want to publish novels.
Novels and memoirs and self-help. People come in with amazing projects, but a lot of times they get one or two things wrong. They don't have a good title. They're in the wrong genre. They don't understand. They think they can write 20 pages and get $200,000. And a lot of times I'll say, write the whole thing and you're going to get a smaller advance. But there's definitely ways to help people and teach them. And I've had 25 years of, you know, 23 of banging my head against the wall, so I could totally explain to them what I did wrong and tricks.
And how to do it. And
I bring in editors and agents to a lot of the events who tell them the truth, which is exciting, kind of, because I watch their work get better.
But don't you think also there's some people that really they just should not do it? It's their dream, but they shouldn't do it.
I'm pretty upbeat,
you're much more upbeat about it than I am, I think.
You know what else is? Luckily, I teach journalism, so I've had people that are semi-illiterate, and I could still teach them how to get an article in the New York Post or the Daily News, you know, or an online publication. So luckily, I mean, it's two pages. I mean, an op-ed piece is 400 words. So if I've had people who I'll help them rewrite it 72 times, but on the 73rd, they'll get it right and sell it. So luckily, it's not, I mean, getting a book deal is hard, but getting a short piece in New York Press, you know, or in the Daily News or the Post,
it's possible if you
take a 15-week class and you just listen to the teacher and you do what they say, it's almost like you're stupid if you can't. It's really not that hard.
Wow. Because I think that people think writing is hard.
I think getting a brilliant book is hard.
I think a good novel is really hard. And I don't think that most of the novels out there are good. I really don't. I don't think there's any point to them. But you know what? I've just met I've probably met 10 people who've decided in their 30s that they were going to pursue their dream of writing a novel. And they write the novel, they give up their job, they put money aside, they write the novel, they rewrite it. 2-3 years go by, it doesn't get published, and their dream is like kind of smashed.
Well, by the way, the advice that I give in the book from my mentors was, don't leave your day job and don't have high expectations about rich and famous. And the question they asked me when it came to writing, would you write this book anyway, even if it never sold and you never got any money for it? And if the answer is no, do something else. And if the answer is yes, this is in me, this is my passion, I have to do it, then you do it, but you do it in a careful way. And that's pretty much what the book teaches.
If somebody said, you know, would you write Sex and the City if you weren't getting paid? No. No fucking way.
Well,
no interest. You ain't paying me, I ain't writing. I don't care. I'm like Britney Spears. You don't pay me, I'm not singing. That's it. Leave Britney alone!
Well, how old were you when you were doing Sex and the City? Like, were you already a successful freelancer?
But I started writing professionally when I was 19. So, and I don't know. I mean, I honestly don't get doing it unless it's your profession.
Well, but my book sort of teaches you how to do it in an intelligent way so you don't screw up your whole life. You know, so if somebody comes to me and they've never written fiction before and they said, my dream in life is to write a novel, I might say, great. First, don't leave your day job. Second, who are you reading? Let's make sure you got 12 good books out there that are similar to what you want. Are you taking a fiction writing class with somebody smart? Do you have a mentor or critic that can go over every chapter? You know, make sure you don't just send it out to agents too quickly and ruin those connections. So there's a smart way to follow your dream.
Right. Without ruining your life.
Exactly. And I almost ruined my life trying to write a novel for 6 years so I could tell everybody exactly what not to do.
Everybody can relate. Well, Susan Shapiro's new book is Only as Good as Your Word, Writing Lessons from My Favorite Literary Gurus. And Susan, of course, is just fantastic. And you got to go and get this book. It's really inspiring. And Susan, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on.
You're listening to Sex, Success, and Sensibility on Sirius Stars, Channel 102.